In terms of the size of CTFO firms per subsector, you'll notice that in terms of clothing and textiles, they're once again characterized by a number of small companies that employs between 0 to 49 employees. We have obviously a few larger firms in both these sectors, including footwear and leather. In terms of the employees in formal employment, you know, it's interesting and important to note that the clothing and textile sector employs just above 80%, okay, of employees that find themselves in formal employment within the sector. Clothing just under 50%, textiles just under 34%, followed by footwear, which is just under 10%. In terms of levy contribution per subsector, the textile subsector contribute, okay, the biggest contributor, they contribute 42.94%, followed by clothing at 35.76%, with obviously the other sectors making some contribution towards the total levy income, which is 59 million, which accounts for 80% of the levy income. In terms of sector profile and sector demarcation, okay, with regard to SIC codes, these are the SIC codes, okay, that comprises the CTFL sector at large. Just to review our performance in terms of NSDS2 versus targets, including obviously the current reporting period, important to note that CTFL CETA interventions during 2010 to address NSDS2 targets and other sector skills priorities involved the following. When one looks at the mandatory grants dispersed to firms that submitted WSPs, which are your workplace skills plans and annual training reports, 80% of mandatory grant budget dispersed to 572 firms. Okay, and this can be attributed to the fact that we've got a an excellent strategy in terms of submission of workplace skills plans and annual training reports, which is obviously accompanied by an excellent advocacy and marketing campaign. Discretionary grants for the employed learners on ABET, management development, technologist training, learnerships, and critical and scarce skills programs. We've got 663 workers that are registered. Discretionary grants for unemployed people on learnerships, technology programs, and work experience interventions, 533 unemployed people registered. In terms of the sector project implemented in partnership with other organizations and donors, we've got the annual Cape Town Fashion Festival, which is organized by SACTU. We have continuous professional development programs for clothing textile employees and students that we do in collaboration with KZN Department of Economic Development and Tourism. We've got clothing and textile seminar series, once again in collaboration with provincial government. We've got the master's program, okay, which is an overseas university at the Czech Republic. This is the Technical University of Liberec. Once again, it's a collaboration project with KZN DED. We've got learnership implementation projects and training layoff scheme, and this is done in collaboration, inter-CETA collaboration with the wholesale and retail CETA and the NSF, also the UIF. Other sector projects funded from the discretionary funding, just to mention a few, we have driven QCTO qualifications development in the sector, which has a national impact. We've got short courses for pattern making and work study, short courses for sewing machine mechanics, sewing machinist, textile training project in the Western Cape, skills programs, NKF Level 1, clothing manufacturing that we've got in Gauteng, cluster training for small firms, short courses, okay, with regard to obviously productivity and absenteeism in the Western Cape, but new venture creation projects, and we have support obviously to our master's students at the University of Stellenbosch. In terms of our SLA and obviously our performance against targets, you know, sector indicator 1.2, sector specialists trained in the use of the critical and scarce skills guide. We've set a five-year target of 840. We've achieved 108%. Large firms that receive WSP ATR grants, we've achieved 94% performance. Medium firms that receive WSP ATR grants, 83% across the 5 years. Small levy-paying firms supported by CETAs, I can tell you that in terms of that, 81%. A statistic which I'm personally not very proud of is indicator 2.5, okay, where we have small BE firms and BE cooperatives supported by skills development. We've set a target of 48, but we have not achieved, you know, in terms of the target at all. But in defense of the CETA and the sector, what I can tell you is that we have undertaken a BE study to establish the current BE status of firms in the CTFL sector in order to identify the number of existing small BE firms and BE cooperatives in the sector. And some of the findings will be quite interesting to the portfolio committee in the sense that the level of black ownership among small businesses is high, although obviously black female ownership is very low in the sector. In terms of the levels of black ownership amongst large and medium-sized companies, that is very, very low. And obviously the sector needs to, you know, address transformation within the sector at large. And in terms of responses of these BE companies as to their non-participation, you know, what they are telling us is that the cost of compliance with the requirements of the CETA outweighed the benefits that the CETA were offering to these companies, okay? And when we look at the cost of compliance, this refers to obviously bargaining council compliance. I find that many of the BE companies are not bargaining council compliant. And what they are saying also is that, you know, there's an excessive administrative burden that's been placed on them when accessing the support services. Another important factor to note is that, you know, some of these firms, they complain that they're not being able to send staff for training, obviously because of, you know, they have no substitutes that could take, you know, the place of staff on the production floor. In terms of the ABET target, workers that have attended ABET programs levels 1 to 4, across the years we've achieved 69% performance. Workers completed ABET programs 17%, but this is in keeping with national trends in terms of even the National Education Department with regard to ABET provisioning in this country. It's similar trend and similar challenges that we've experienced. Workers that have entered learning programs, learnership bursaries, etc., there we have overachieved 236%. Workers that have completed learning programs, 184%. The number of organizations that are supported, you know, by the CETA in terms of NGOs, CBOs, and co-ops, 248%. Unemployed people that have entered learning programs, 172% achievement. Unemployed people that have completed learning programs, 213%. Number of learners assisted to gain workplace experience, it's at 41%. Obviously, that is work in progress. Number of young people that have entered new venture programs, 67%. And in terms of our ISOEs and the way we support them, institutions assisted, type of support and linked to criteria, not cumulative, 60%. Institutions accredited to manage delivery of new venture creation qualification, that is 150% achievement. Also important to note that in terms of the HQA SACWA audit, we have achieved a score of 1.9 out of 3, which is an excellent rating of our HQA, okay, in terms of the SACWA audits. And in terms of our upload to learners on the National Learner Database, our status is very much a green status, so we are currently, you know, always in uploading learners onto the database, meaning that learners are achieving within the sector. Just to give you a brief overview of the flagship projects during NSDS2, I think the sector has really mastered learnership implementation. Since 2002, we have registered 51 learnerships for the Department of Labor, registered in excess of 11,000 learners, and 57% of them were previously unemployed. We have graduated just under 7,000 learners, 61% successfully. And in terms of our placement in employment, we have a track record of 80%. And this was done, obviously this figure we've got from our TRACES study, which was conducted 2 years ago. In terms of our flagship projects, once again, you know, it's learnership implementation. We have accredited more than 70 workplace providers, okay, for the full qualification, and 5 Australian providers, which are all registered and comply with national legislation in terms of education legislation, okay, and they offer the full qualification at levels 1 and 2 to learners in the sector. I think, you know, an achievement to note is that we have established our own private FET model to enable smaller firms in the sector to participate in learnership delivery through partnerships with those training providers, okay, and thus we have broadened the base of learnership delivery within the sector, brought in more smaller companies into the fold so that they could now, you know, offer a full NQF-aligned learnership program. We have entered into MOUs with 7 public FET colleges to offer full industry qualifications at NQF level 1. We've accredited 5 non-levy paying companies or community-based organizations to offer skills programs. In terms of the Cape Town Fashion Festival, it's an annual initiative by Labour constituency SAPTU to promote local clothing, textile and design sectors. It forms part of SAPTU's program to save jobs and promote and develop the fashion manufacturing industry, embracing clothing, textile, leather and footwear. I think an important component to the Cape Town Fashion Festival is an education and training focus, which incorporates a graduation ceremony of CTFL learners who successfully complete their learnership qualifications. Okay, one of the few sectors to obviously acknowledge the women, okay, in terms of women in leadership in the sector, the regional event that's held in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape, which are the main focus areas for our industries. Purpose was to recognize women and highlight the role of women leaders within the industry and their contributions. Women of the region was elected in each to acknowledge their contributions in workplace and social environmental and environmental development. Learnership programs for the disabled people in sheltered employment, once again, significant achievement of the CETA. This was conducted in collaboration with SA Lewis in sheltered employment factories in Cape Town and Johannesburg. Purpose was to develop sewing and clothing construction skills for potential entrepreneurs. 18 disabled learners were verified as competent against an NQF-aligned and credit-bearing skills program. In terms of the QCTO qualifications development, you know, we have taken the lead from all other CETAs. We took an early initiative to commence with our development of occupationally directed qualifications for, and which are ready for registration on the occupational qualifications framework. 24 qualifications linked to 5 occupations on the organizing framework for occupations, and those were the 5 occupations that we have targeted, which are the core and focus occupations within the sector, and we are just awaiting now the QCTO process to register these qualifications. We have collaboration projects, okay, in terms of our textile science master's program, and from the racial, obviously you could see the racial profile of the students in the photograph. Recently qualified, you know, 18 students who have achieved a master's degree in textile science. Okay, this is the first time for the sector, first time in the history of South Africa, where we have now, in collaboration with the Technical University of Liberec, we have qualified master's degree students within the textile sector. Purpose of the project was to build academic research and product development skills in the CTFL sector to ensure a sustainable and competitive industry. Second and third groups have commenced studies and are progressing well. We also run continuous professional development programs and seminar series within the clothing textile sector. These are, if you look at the CPD program, it's a 6-week program where we take, you know, our learners from within the CTFL industry. We give them a first time, for some of them it's a first time overseas experience, okay, in the Czech Republic. And obviously these students, they attend a series of seminars in order to upgrade their knowledge. They attend, you know, lectures and new developments in the clothing textile international market, and they receive exposure to world-class manufacturing operations and academic tutoring. In terms of the seminar series, it's a 3-week seminar series that we conduct throughout South Africa, once again focusing on the 3 main regions to enhance the technical skills profile of the industry through diffusion of skills and knowledge from international institutions. And we have targeted like in excess of 1,000 delegates who have attended our seminar series in 2009. In terms of our inter-CETA collaboration, we have a learnership implementation project to the tune of 3.5 million with WNR CETA. We utilize towards obviously learnership grants, and we've registered 150 unemployed people on learnerships. In terms of team leader development, you know, we're always trying to build up management capacity within the sector. Something that was identified, during our skills audit of 2008. Funded by the WNR CETA to the tune of 1.5 million, utilized for management development grants to register 150 supervisors and employees earmarked for development of team leader development skills programs. Just to give you some kind of, you know, overview with regard to progress on the training layoff scheme, purpose was to assist companies experiencing financial difficulties and to equip staff earmarked for possible retrenchments, okay, with transferable skills, okay, to other sectors in order to make them more employable and more productive. It's funded by the CETA, WNR CETA, NSF, and UIF. Training commenced in 5 clothing and textile factories in Uitenhage, Newcastle, Durban, Port Elizabeth, and Cape Town. excess of 1,400 beneficiaries, okay, have received training through the TLS, the Training Layoff Scheme, and obviously the implementation is constantly being monitored by the CTFL CETA Council, and obviously we are constantly promoting TLS to companies, okay, that are experiencing financial distress and challenges in the sector. To give you the financial overview, I'm going to call upon the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Gina Lazel, to do that for us.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. We received our 10th unqualified audit report since inception. There were no material matters to report for 2009-10. During 2009-10, we received permission from the Minister of Higher Education to exceed our 10% of our admin spending. We did exceed our 10% by 0.5%, and this is mainly due to our audit fees for our Auditor General increasing by 262% during the current financial year, and also there was a decrease in our levy income of 4%. This was mainly due to the economic climate and the various challenges faced by the companies in our sector during 2009-10. We introduced various cost-cutting measures to minimise us going over the 10%. We relocated our Cape Town regional office to cheaper premises. We've also negotiated cheaper rental rates at our current offices in KZN and Gauteng. We limited our salary increases, which came into effect in November 2010, to 6.5%. We've also used our mandatory grant, which we received from EDTP CETA, on submission of our WSP for training our staff, and also discretionary grants and bursaries that we received from EDTP CETA to top up the staff training. We also limited the use of external consultants and made sure that our staff had the capacity to meet our key performance areas. We also hired interns, one of which was subsidized from EDTP CETA and another one which we gave work experience to ease our financial burdens. Expenses such as telephone, stationery, computer, and repairs and staff travel were limited. We also did not exceed any of our budget line items. Our budget committee also met during the financial year to just relook at the budget and reassess the levies. We've also negotiated with our service provider, who we receive our MIS system from, to not increase the costs in any financial year. So those are various cost-cutting measures which have helped us just stay within our budget line items and minimise that possibility of exceeding our 10% by even more. Moving to our next slide, this is total income. It looks at our total income we received from 2005-06 to 2009-10. In the first 2005-06, it does look higher compared to 2006-07. And during that financial year, in August 2005, companies who were paying salaries below the 500,000 threshold were then exempt, so that did negatively affect our levy income. Looking to 2006-07, going through to 2008-09, there was quite an increase in 2008-09. This is mainly due to our joint collaboration project with KZNDD, where we received income of 1.193 million. Investment income also increased from 3 million to 5 million. In that financial year, 2008-09, we invested our money with two banks which were approved by Treasury. In our current financial year, 2010-11, we have moved our investment funds over to the CPD account. Moving to the next slide, total levies. It can be seen in the slides from 2008 to 2009 to the 2009-10 financial year, our levies decreased by 4%. And this did put a huge burden on our admin resources. And as I said previously, there were some company closures during the financial year due to the struggles that our company endured and also the economic climate. Looking at our mandatory grant disbursements, the last 2 years, we've paid 80% of our mandatory grants to companies who have submitted their WSPs. In 2007-08, it was at 90%. Moving to our discretionary grant expenses. In our discretionary reserves at the end of 2019, we had $48.5 million. $44 million of those funds were contractually committed. There have been delays in paying of our discretionary grants, mainly due to us paying out grants in tranches to minimise risk, and also our funding windows are advertised in September in line with the train use, and there's also a slow submission of documentation from companies. Moving on to our admin expenses, the dark blue columns are our admin levy income, the light blue are our admin expenses. Can be seen in 2006-07, we exceeded our 10% on our admin expenses. Permission was obtained from the Department of Labor to exceed this, and it was purely to purchase an MIS system. And then, as I said, in 2019, we've exceeded our 10% levy income by 0.5%. We do anticipate spending going over that 10% in the 2010-11 year, and we have sent an application to DHT to approve that over expenditure. Moving on to the next slide, it can clearly be seen how the audit fees have increased. In discussions with our Auditor General, it was delayed to us that the subsidy from the Department of Labor was done away with, and the AG had to also align their salaries with the private sector, so that accounted for the huge increase in audit fees. Thank you very much.
In conclusion, what I can say is that the CTFL CETA stakeholders are anticipating the Minister's announcement of the new CETA landscape and NSDS3. Given the CETA's limited resources and the economic challenges faced by the CTFL sector during NSDS2, the CTFL sector has performed well in meeting the demands of the National Skills Development Strategy over the five-year period. Looking ahead at NSDS3, CTFL CETA Council has already embraced the new strategy in its draft strategic plan and the SSP, and will continue to drive skills development in the sector. This will be done in line with the government's priorities as outlined in the MTSF. It is anticipated that the new economic policy and national industrial policy framework would assist the CTFL sector to become more competitive and sustainable in the medium to long term. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that presentation. And I would obviously open for members to interact with the presentation based on the fact that we have received the annual report, and therefore we are dealing with that. Members, can I note hands who are going to engage? I'll start from my left. Honorable Makubela, Honorable Moshwana, Honorable Dikobo, Honorable Van der Wiesen, and Honorable Klopfer Lawrence. Just for me, okay, let me just appreciate the fact that you're one of the few CTAs that has regional offices. Yeah. In the country, in all the features that we have, and that needs to be commended. The original offices in Devon and in Gauteng and Cape Town. So we need to commend you for that. It's something that we feel strongly about, that at least you have tried to have that. So I think in just that, I really appreciate, I think we need to appreciate that effort in being accessible to majority of the South Africans. I have quite a number of issues, but let me just start with members. I noted in the order that I have noted, starting with Honorable Makubela.
Thanks, Chairperson. Over the years, the BE firms and the BE cooperatives, there's nothing that happened in the from 5-6 to 8-9 financial years. perhaps we need a better reasoning as to what the problem is. The second refers to about 2 million rand that was supposed to have been spent, which has not been spent, and you want to spend it in this current financial year if conditions are met. And what are these conditions? Perhaps you can share with us, because that has been recurring, and whether these conditions in your view will be met, or whether they've actually been met by now. The third will be in terms of your constituency reps who happen to sit in governance structures. They operated for the entire year with no remuneration. And what are the reasons for that? What is the policy saying? Or it was owing to other reasons rather than what is obvious to some of us. On the annual report on page 62, there's quite a lot of errors, which makes the whole thing to be less credible, even if there may be no real problems. But you just have got quite a lot of miscalculations, misallocations, and all of that. 62, yes. Just to explain, because you should have had enough time to prepare all this, so that if there are errors, I think they were supposed to be minimal, as reflected in that. That just meant, I think, about 7 of those. The other, which you may want to share with us, you've got the HIV and AIDS policy in place, but I think we're interested more in the actual implementation, whether you're observing that policy or it has just been adopted and therefore you may claim that you have not been able to move on it, or if there are challenges, what would be those? As the chair indicated, you're operating in the main within 3 provinces. Any reason for that in terms of the other 6 provinces that are there in the country? Or whether there are efforts to broaden your locations. There's a risk that you're indicating, the foreign exchange risk, because of your interaction with the foreign institution and transactions that are done in there. What has been the level of exposure to that, or the implications, whether there are mechanisms to avoid any such problems? The last one would refer to ABET. You're saying the large part of your workforce, the CTFL workforce, have no formal schooling, which may be understandable. But then part of the efforts to deal with that, I know you're engaging on ABET kind of training, but in there or in the process, would they be expecting you to focus as well on RPL to assist in that regard? What have you done? We know there may be challenges in that regard, but we need your own version of what becomes the problems. Why your members or people you're dealing with can't be RPL'd, or whether you've got any efforts related to that. And the...
Yes, that was the last one.
Yeah, last but one. The leasing of offices. Why are you not able to move towards owning your own assets in terms of office buildings? than leasing them. I know you indicated that you moved to a cheaper one, but that's not necessarily the same as owning your own. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Makube. Just emphasis on RPL specifically. I know this RPL strategy was supposed to be reviewed in February 2009, and there's no indication even in your annual report, nor your presentation, what happened on that one. But as well, the process is because you reviewed it in 2000 the first time, the second time you reviewed it in 2008. Lessons learned from the RPL process in reviewing during those 2 years that you reviewed, or the terms that you have reviewed, and what are the difficulties? Why have you not reviewed the RPL strategy now, as we said, because it was due for review in 2009, February? I noted Honorable Mushwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question on the three. The first one, actually, I'm starting from the back and going to the beginning. What informed the choice? I know that you went to Czech Republic, and I'm interested in checking what informed that. Because let me stop at that, because I think I would have. But when you talk about the fashion, textile, and stuff, maybe this would be the last place to go. But anyway, maybe you will explain to us why the chair. And then, the question on the three provinces was already asked, but I want to expand it to say, why big provinces? Is it because of the factories? Because the Gauteng and the Natal and KZN, they're too big, and there is need definitely in these smaller places where I think you'll be more than appreciated and really bring real transformation to these smaller and minor places. I'm concerned that you go to big provinces. And you have also entered into some memorandum of understanding with 7 public equity colleges. Is it in from one particular province, or 7 spread from 7 provinces? I'm checking on that one. Thank you very much. Otherwise, I appreciate your report and the fact that you are doing something, but of course, we would like you to do more. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mushwana. Honorable Diko.
thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, also, my congratulations for the report. Good report. Number 2, the clean audit. We congratulate them for that. Also, to congratulate them for having programs for the disabled learners. What we have seen with the other CITAs talking about disabled learners, they are unable to reach targets, therefore creating impressions that you can't find disabled learners when you know that they are all over. But also, congratulations for their partnership with FET colleges. But I guess Mrs. Honorable Member Mushwane's question still stands. Would like to know which ones are those ones. I'm also glad that they have a relationship with a foreign university, but also a local one, because I think for me that is important. Now, my gripes. Well, the first one is that I guess they know they are going to present an annual report. Annual means year report. But I see they have clouded their report with the many years, and they have already reported on those years. It's actually been very difficult for us to extract the achievement for this year. And in fact, when they report their targets, they're reporting on 5 years instead of 1 year. It makes me a bit unhappy, because I must struggle to get information for the year under review. So just that one. The next one, new venture creations. You remember we asked when we were dealing with CETA. Again, it says zero here for 2009-2010 in terms of the achievement. What are the issues? But I see that they are saying for the last 5 years, they're talking about 65%. I'm interested in the lifespan of this new venture. Our experience is that, you know, you help this person to establish a business. 3 months down the line, the business doesn't exist anymore. So I just want to know, these ones that you have established, how many of them are surviving? Or we're talking about child mortality in respect to this new venture creation. The last question, Honorable Chairperson, is about the provinces. Again, excuse us, because that's how we think, and that's how our mandates are from our parties, to make sure that things are not concentrated in urban provinces. I am saying this being fully aware of the fact that the industry itself may be concentrated in certain areas, but I'm very curious. I saw that bar graph of how many companies, and coming from the Limpopo province, I know we don't have many textile, but there are many dry cleans. Are they not, just mean they are not paying levy? I mean, in Polokwane only, almost every third street you'll find, in some cases, they are just lined up like that. There are many, as far as I know. Does it mean that they are not paying? Maybe they can, in their answer, they could also go back to that slide that shows provincial presence. I guess you can say the same about the other provinces that do not have textile companies, but writing us obviously are there. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable Van der Wiesen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to first commend the representatives of the CETA for a number of things. Some of the other members have already mentioned the clean audit, etc. But one other thing which I've picked up, and I hope I'm correct in that, is that the salaries paid to senior management staff in this CETA also reflect the fact that it is one of the smaller CETAs. And that does not often happen to be the case. Sometimes some of the CEOs and CFOs of CETAs take home enormous salaries, and we appreciate the fact you can come up with such a good report, and also your figures in general look quite good, and it seems to me as if you are able to stretch your rands, not only at home, but also in terms of the work that you do. Just as a background, I joined this committee recently from the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee, and one of the sectors that we are extremely concerned about in South Africa because of the extreme job losses that we've had over the last few years is particularly the clothing and textiles industry. Now, government made quite a bit of its economic recovery plan last year, also under Minister Ibrahim Patel, and training and retraining, upskilling to increase the productivity of workers in the clothing and textiles industry was quite a chapter in, as part of that plan. Yet, I do not see any links between this report for this year and those plans that were announced by Minister Patel and Minister Dr. Davies, etc. So if you could just expand on how you see the role and where did things go wrong, why is it that you know, in this year you actually had to scale down on many of your activities? And then I also would like to commend you for your negotiations with the WNR CETA and also other government spheres such as KwaZulu-Natal, provincial governments, economic development desk, because it seems to me this is one of the few CETAs that try and get funds from other spheres, other sources, and then also manage that as part of their portfolio. So I would like to commend you on that, but if you could just expand and say, where did things go wrong with this economic recovery plan, or am I wrong in that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Van der Wiesen. Honorable Klopper, thank you, Chairperson. Like my colleagues, I'm also a new member on this committee. I used to be with Basic Education. I would like some answers just to get clarity, seeing that CETAs are not familiar with me. The slide on the 18 South African students
who did their masters at the Czech Republic University as opposed to Stellenbosch. What is the difference? Is this master's degree more or less on the same level, and why these two universities, and do they focus on different matters and whatsoever? I just would like to have some more background on that. And then the slide on disability learners with or sheltered employment and 18 disabled learners, exactly what kind of disability are we referring to or talking about? And then why specifically focus on women in this industry? I would like to know what the background therefore is. And then the slide on CTFL learnership implementation. Could you give me some more the slide? Well, the pages aren't numbered, so it's difficult. It's it starts with since 2002. So over a period of 8 years, only 51 learnerships. That's the one. Yes. And then, yes, only 51 learnerships registered with DOL since 2002. And then the registered learners, as opposed to the those who graduated, does that mean we have more or less a dropout figure of 50%? And then also regarding the placement in employment, estimated over 80%. What is the background? Can you give me some more information on the tracer study you refer to, and how involved are you in placement of learners? Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for the input and questions you have raised. I think there are a couple of issues that have been raised for Chairperson and CEO and sentiments that have been communicated by the members of the Portfolio Committee. The issue of skills layoff that you reflected on, just elaborate on what is happening there. You have spent money on the skills layoff, and I remember when we were here, sometime this is another area that we were touching to try and find out what's happening. Are you able to trace where are these people? Are they still training? Are they back absorbed in light of the challenges that are there in the industry, more or less? And I think it will link even on to the RPL again, how to link the two as part of your skills layoff and all that. But my concern mainly is that, I'm not sure if you reflected on your annual report, I've put up in some of the documents about your institution. My concern is that most of your learnership sits at level NQF level 2, meaning it's at a lower level. If anyone wants to do a learnership at a bit higher level, because your metric type of learners who come from high school wanting to do a learnership in this industry, level 2 is very low for them. They would want to do a learnership at least at 4 or 5. And I noted that you don't have any registered learnership on level NQF level 5. You have 2 registered on NQF level 4, and the rest is on NQF level 2 below, 2 and 1. So, and it comes to the issue that how do you intend to attract more people into the sector if this is what you are offering at that level, more or less. So for me, it's quite very low to be able to offer somewhere there. So it's a bit of a challenge. But again, echoing sentiments of colleagues on your achievement and targets. I've looked at page 40, the annual reports, where you are reporting on your targets. So it goes back to the issue that you receive a clean audit, it does not translate in what you achieve. Performance is not translating to your financial usage. Value for money, the money that you are getting, spending, translating in what you are supposed to achieve, it's not there. Because you're achieving a clean audit, but targets are not met, which is a huge challenge for us. because the majority of things that you are looking for is what you have been able to do with the money that has been allocated to you, the money that you receive coming through to your coffers. As I'm saying, if you look at your, for example, page 14, there's issues I have there, almost indicator 1.2, indicator 2.1, indicator 2.2. On indicator 1.2, you've got a positive variance, but just highlight to us in terms of your critical skills needed by the sector in development, because you're highlighting that you want to train even the people. But again, your SDF, at what level are you training them? What is this training that you are putting? Each industry or each institution doesn't have an STF, or what's the issue there? But of concern, again, similar, your issues around your SMME support. You also target 176 firms, which you did not meet. Medium firms, 150, you only met 80. Is on your time. So for me, it's quite a challenge that I'm looking at the annual report. I'm trying to understand it, translate it based on your performance, financial performance. It does not link. Because you've got to be able to say we have spent, and therefore, having spent the money, we are able to reflect even in our performance. It goes even at us at level, you are not meeting the target. What are the challenges? Just your training output there. Because if you are expected to meet variance of 725, negative variance of 1,385, it's quite a huge number that you're talking about, which is very much of a concern. I mean, you go through. You targeted for the sector 44 young persons trained and mentored to form new ventures. So as a race, again, nothing there at all. Page zero that you've been able to achieve. Which is a bit of a concern. I mean, how do you have that? What's the future of your sector if you can't even invest in young people who are going to have to carry over and sustain the issue in the industry? You wanted to do so. I'm just going through. You look at your targets throughout. I wouldn't be able to do it in percentage, but for me, it's almost towards 50%, or if not more, of non-achievement based on your targets. I'm just quickly. I couldn't, you know, tangibly say. But from where I'm sitting, you are sitting at less than 50% of the performance achievement. What are the issues? What are the challenges? I remember last time, CEO, I was telling you that part of the problems that we have, even sustainability, it's how the sector responds to the need and demand. And one example I made is that if you go to other countries, your Bangkoks and all those things in China, you get an outfit within a day or two. And you said to me, no, we can do it in South Africa. I've looked in the province where I come from. I've not found one where I can get an outfit in 2 days. This is what I challenged you last time we interacted. Yes. I've went back into my province. I've looked. I still have not found an even if it's around the corner, what that can do, a tailored outfit within 2 days. And I was making this reference last time when we interacted that you go to countries like China, Bangkok, because the industry is good. There's a market. South Africa has got a market in terms of clothing. There's a market. I mean, one, if you are to open such a shop around the corner here in Parliament, you can imagine how many of us will be running there to get a different outfit. Just an example. And to be able to look at the market demand and what the industry is able to respond to. But that you have a responsibility as you do the training, as you interact with the sector. To be able to equip. You see, the growth path that you are talking about, will mean nothing if we are able, not able to change the way we think as South Africans. It's going to remain a growth path with targets will not achieve it. Because all of us have a responsibility to play, to make sure that that growth path that you have reflected, that you are going to try and respond to it. If we do not go to that extent of thinking thoroughly and looking at what we need to do to respond to those challenges, we are going to sit the same time next year and look at unachieved targets. This is an industry that is huge, that has huge potential. It's one industry that can grow. We know the challenges of China brought to us as South African producers, but if we are able to respond, the industry is able to respond. I think these are the interaction that the CETA should be able to provide as part of the training, part of development, even your new ventures creation program, your project, to be able to assist the sector to set itself, sit where it's able to respond positively and benefit and grow. Because I don't think that this sector can really suffer much if we are able to respond to what we want to. This made of China, made in China too much can go if we respond to the demands of the society. If this sector positions itself correctly, we would be able to go. We are faced with that's why you have so much money that's spent on skills layoff because it was affected, the industry was affected. Because the target mainly most of the time is that you are exporting. So you're leaving a market that exists internally and rushing out. The industry is looking at that. I'm just raising these things when you engage with the sector, when you engage with the institutions and your providers, your employers. These are the things that they've got to look at to be able to survive in the coming years, to be able to contribute positively towards the growth of the economy of this country. So I just thought I should make those comments as board chairperson and CEO in how we position ourselves is quite important as we speak. And I would like to hand over to you to respond to some of the questions. I mean, others are comments that you have to note and deal with them as you go forward. But just to respond to the questions that are raised. And I'll start with you, CEO, chairperson, if you have some.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank you, the Honourables of the House. You know, we just have noted a lot of the concerns, and it's been actually raised in our council board, a lot of the concerns that is coming up. For example, the recognition of prior learning was one of our main discussions, which we just had a week ago in our strategic planning workshop and taking it forward. And we have highlighted that it is a real concern and a real issue that the industry has not really been addressed. And we actually put some sort of an action plan, and we will look at it. Now the issues about the ABIT training, you know, it's, I know that they say that, you know, we do not focus too much on the adult basic education and training, but it's a real concern within the industry itself. We, you know, we should look at our marketing strategy and how we are going to take it forward, and it's been noted. The issue regarding the learners going to Czech and not in Stellenbosch, well, I would leave that question to the CEO to address, because I think that was more about funding which was allocated to our students from the Czech. And the issues around our fundings, and that I would leave to the CFO, which she will most probably will take you guys through it. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Chairperson of the CETA Board, for your input. In terms of the questions, firstly, I'd like to thank you for some of your very kind comments, you know, in terms of the way we deliver with regard to our skills mandate. I think you've been very kind, and it's really appreciated by the CETA chairperson and the management team out here, which will also extend, obviously, to our council. I think what the honourable member was concerned about, you know, in terms of the few of the concerns, firstly, he looked at, like, the number of BE firms, cooperatives. We have set a target, and I think he requested from us most probably a better review of the issues and problems. What I can tell you is that, you know, we set up a research study with regard to the number of, you know, and the status of companies in terms of the BE in the sector. It was quite a comprehensive study with regard to the large, small, medium-sized firms and the cooperatives. The study is yet to be finalized, and from that study, we are expecting some kind of strategy to be evolved, you know, in order to incentivize BE firms from participating in the skill development strategy. You must understand by the inherent nature of, you know, ownership with regard to companies in the CTFL sector, coming from a traditional past, you know, many of these companies, especially your medium-sized or large companies, they are very much white-owned, and they're owned by, you know, families, okay, white families. There's really not much incentives, you know, for them, like, to transform and to comply with regard to, you know, the BE requirements, etc. So, obviously, you know, transformation is happening and the pace is a little bit slow, but we need to look at further incentivization with regard, you know, to transforming the sector. What I'd also like to note is that what we are saying is that once the study has been finalized and it's imminent for finalization, what we want to do is obviously have an excellent, a good strategy to obviously to promote BE within the companies and obviously to empower those that are BE compliant with regard to obviously they must have a BE status level of or score of 3 and above. And in terms of the new strategy, we have also put in indicators, that is NSDS 3, to incentivize, okay, the empowerment of BE companies and cooperatives within the sector. I've also alluded to the fact that the, you know, the lack of cooperation from these BE firms and the lack of uptake from these firms with regard to, we currently have a BE funding window, okay, that addresses this key focus area. And obviously, much to my disappointment, as I mentioned first, you know, in terms of personally, I must say that uptake has been slow. Although we have, like, promoted this funding window at all our regional training forums, in terms of special presentations that we have made, you know, at these RTFs, etc., unfortunately, uptake has been very slow. And the criteria for the uptake is a very simple uptake. They need to declare their BE status, and obviously we are looking at empowering the, you know, the owners or the managers of these companies with regard to their financial capacity and uptake. And it's a sad thing that some of these firms never understood the criteria and requirements of this funding window, although I can assure you that we have done everything more and above, you know, to promote this funding window, because obviously it has a political agenda to it. It has a transformation agenda to it, and we really wanted to, and I personally want to see BE happen within the sector. In terms of the $2 million spent or not being spent, I just want to, like, refer that question to the CFO.
The $2 million that shows as income received in advance, that was money that we received from WNR CETA for the joint collaboration project. We received those funds in the last month of the financial year. And the conditions that were attached to those funds is that we'd have to do a funding window for learnership so companies could apply, and that took place in the new financial year.
Thank you very much. In terms of remuneration for council members, what I can state that in terms of the terms of reference and participation and the constitution of the CTFL CETA, we do not, you know, give our council members any kind of remuneration, although we do compensate for subsistence and travel.
The board members.
The board members.
We don't pay them anything.
We don't pay them anything. You must understand that we operate under a very constrained budget. And what I would like to, you know, inform the our Education Portfolio Committee that many of these council board members, they work out of interest and benefit for the sector. They really want to see the sector, you know, be sustainable in the medium to long term, and they give extended hours, including weekends, to ensure that we meet, you know, our strategy in terms of skill development within the sector.
I think it helps us, Mr. Hoon. Remember the issue we talked about last time, that of just having criteria, we of dealing with the board's remuneration. I think it was when we were interacting with the last two sitters, we spoke about that. I'm just noting what they are saying from their side, that there's nothing that sits in the board members' package. Okay.
Thank you very much. In terms of implementation of our HIV/AIDS policy, I can tell you in every good organization, you know, that's well managed, which is efficient and effective, you know, we've got policies and procedures in place relating to HIV/AIDS with regard to how we manage employees, you know, in terms of the pandemic. What I can tell you is that we have clear guidelines in our policies and procedures with regard to the affected employee, and also how other employees interact with such employee, and also relating to disclosures, you know, making full disclosures within the organization, etc. So yes, there are clear policies and guidelines. Thus far, you know, we don't have a single reported case to the senior management with regard to an instance of HIV/AIDS, you know, regarding an employee. So obviously, you know, the policy and procedure didn't come into effect. But we also have some guidelines relating to the way we deal with our clients and our stakeholders pertaining to the policies and procedures, etc. But it has not been like something significant or material within the CETA currently. So there's nothing more to report on in terms of that. In terms of focusing and operating in the three main provinces, I can tell you that that's where, you know, our companies are concentrated, you know, large, medium, small companies, CTFL companies are concentrated. And you'll notice that, you know, in order to obviously ensure that the companies are competitive, many of them are located in non-metro areas and in rural areas within these provinces in order to ensure that they are sustainable. So, yes, we do have a strategy and a focus that deals with, obviously, rural and rural development, etc. But although there is a physical presence of, you know, of our branches within these provinces, I can assure you that they reach out far and wide. For example, like our KZN provincial office deals with the entire Eastern Cape, inclusive of East London, Port Elizabeth. The Western Cape office obviously will deal with the Northern Cape region and certain parts of the, you know, the Lower Free State, etc. Our Gauteng offices deals with upper parts of Free State, you know, the Northwest, Mpumalanga, Limpopo. And in terms, by virtue of the fact that we have received WSPs and ATRs from each of our provinces, and each, obviously, and by virtue of the fact that companies in all of the provinces benefit from the scheme, from our, obviously, skill development initiatives and discretionary grant funding, there's testimony to the fact that, you know, there are all companies within the borders of South Africa are within the reach of the CTFL CETA. You know, I have a special also interest as an educationist in terms of recognition of prior learning. And I can tell you that, yes, these policies were reviewed in the past. In terms of, you know, the history of the sector, there was a company in, I think it was Seton or was it Bada in Gauteng, where close on to approximately 150 learners were RPR'd on an NQF Level 2 qualification. And this was the first time that it happened in the sector. And obviously one of our providers, which was Arenda Learnership College, was very proud of that achievement. But I'm of the view that, you know, recognition of prior learning actually was being stifled in this country largely due to the fact of the structure of the SAQWA-based qualification. And it couldn't happen, like, naturally within workplaces, especially for your occupationally directed programs. And last week, we had interrogated this in terms of NSDS3, you know, at length, where we had specialist speakers speak to us. You know, they came from SAQWA. They spoke to us of the recognition of prior learning, and we have developed a strategy, okay, which is still in draft stages, which still needs to be consolidated into an excellent strategy going forward. But I can tell you that in terms of the new structure of qualifications with regard to the QCTO, that has a different type of a structure in terms of a knowledge, practical and work experience component to those qualifications. I could see recognition of higher learning working quite naturally, okay, and it could happen in the sector, and it could give you the massification of learners to be recognized through this methodology, you know, without any issues and without any problems. So, yes, we are engaging with recognition of prior learning. We acknowledge that at around, you know, in excess of 30% of the sector, you know, have a qualification which is a GET qualification and below. We have acknowledged all of that, and we see, obviously, benefit in implementing a proper strategy for recognition of prior learning within the sector. And we have set sector indicators, targets. We have also aligned a budget for implementing RPR within the sector. And we want to heed to the clarion call of the unions and of labor, where we're going to see mass recognition of workers through this process. And I can assure you that I've been to many of the companies, and when I see people, especially the footwear clothing companies, when I see people on sewing machines employed for 32 years, engaged in routine exercises for 32 years and above, you know, we would like to see some kind of recognition for those workers, you know, through a national qualification. We want to see, and I would like to see it happen naturally. But with the new QCTO qualifications, I am of the view that this could happen naturally. Just on the question of the listing of officers, or the leasing of officers rather, and, you know, the move towards owning own officers, you'll note that in the CTFL sector, you know, we've been using 10% of our budget, okay, which barely seats to our administration costs. We're not a sector that has large resources, financial resources at our disposal. So we had to look at ownership against, obviously, the leasing of offices, and we found it like it would be more financially prudent for us to lease offices rather than to buy offices, which obviously is quite costly when you look at the commercial property today. But we need to interrogate that further. Okay, maybe going into a new CETA environment, we need to look at the fact of maybe where we could purchase our own offices. But I would like the committee to note that we are a CETA with very small financial resources. And obviously we can just, you know, afford like small monthly payments towards leasing office space. So I don't know if the chief financial officer at this very juncture would like to add anything to that.
Yes, I agree with PK. It was discussed quite a while ago now with our board, and due to financial constraints, it was decided at the time to lease due to budget constraints. If I could just answer the question that was raised regarding prior year era, just to reiterate, these errors were detected by the CETA, by the CFO. It was not detected by the Auditor General, so it was incorporated into the draft financials before the audit. One of the main reasons was that we accrued for discretionary expenses in 2008-09, and going through into 2019, we couldn't pay over these discretionary grants because after repeated attempts and trying to get the outstanding documentation from the companies, they eventually told us that they didn't need the grants anymore. So we had to put it through as a prior year error in our previous financial year. We also, in previous years, accounted for our website development costs as an admin expense, and in re-looking at the GRAP statements, we brought it in as an intangible asset. For our fixed assets, it was rounding off errors where we had to restate the amount. And looking at our financial instruments and re-looking at the GRAP statements and the figures, it was changed. But as I just want to stress, these were picked up before the audit actually commenced, and it wasn't reported on by the Auditor General.
Thank you very much. Just to move on, I mean, a very interesting question was, what informed our choice of engaging with the Technical University of Liberec in the Czech Republic? And why didn't we obviously use, like, the local higher education institutions? And I think a case of point was being made of the University of Stellenbosch, and what is the difference between the University of Stellenbosch offerings as opposed to the Technical University of Liberec. I can assure you that in terms of the higher education training landscape, I think what we need to acknowledge is that, yes, there are huge capacity problems with regard to these higher education institutions offering higher education programs that are directly related to the CTFL CETA scope. many of the higher education institutions, we found that, you know, they have their own capacity issues that they need to deal with. We found that, you know, we have undertaken some kind of reconnaissance where some of our large companies, like, you know, Mr. Walter Sivioni from the Sidel Group, he went across to the Technical University of Liberec. Some of the leaders within the industry had undertaken, like, you know, research surveys and went across to the Technical University of Liberec together with the ex-CEO. And we found that they offer some excellent programs with regard to, obviously, the master's program in textile science, okay, which is a unique master's program that is not offered by any of our higher education institutions in South Africa. With regard to the program offerings by the University of Stellenbosch, what I can say is that they offer a master's program in science, which is pure science, which relates to, obviously, textile polymer science. It has a pure science orientation and not necessarily a textile focus, okay? So when compared to the program offered by the Technical University of Liberec, we found that that's a far superior program. And also we found that, you know, it's an opportunity to give our students and our learners, obviously, the international experience and to send them overseas. And what we do in terms of the learner agreement is that we bind them to contracts whereby for the number of years of study that we offer them overseas, which is obviously fully paid for by the CETA in collaboration with the donors. Obviously, they will have to, like, you know, serve the sector. And we also go over and above to ensure that we find employment for these highly skilled graduates within the sector. I hope I've just answered that question comprehensively. I think with regard to the question, once again, pertains to provinces and obviously the need to have a focus in the smaller provinces. I just also want to make reference to the fact that, you know, if we had a larger, most probably budget and, you know, a bigger skills levy income, I'm sure the possibility exists of us opening offices in some of the other provinces where we do have a focus. But currently, obviously, a major challenge to the CETA is obviously financial resources. In terms of MOUs with regard to the 7 public FET colleges and its provincial spread, I can tell you that, yes, we have MOUs with FET colleges. For example, case in point that I could make of is with the Westcall FET College, which is a public FET college based in Randfontein in the Gauteng. We've also accredited a number of FET colleges to offer our NQF Level 1 coding programs. And once again, we need to acknowledge, in terms of the CTFL CETA scope, not many of these FET colleges have really come to the party and have requested accreditation from the CETA for the CTFL programs. You know, many of the FET colleges, you know, seem to lack an understanding of the onerous requirements for accreditation, you know, with regard to our ETQA requirements. There are capacity issues, but personally what I would like to see happen is that there should be an NCV program, you know, for clothing manufacturing and clothing design or fashion design, you know, that must be implemented within these FET colleges to give it a CTFL focus. You know, there is this old Chinese proverb, you know, I mean, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, but if you teach him to fish, obviously, then you give him the skill, then you feed him for life. And within the CTFL CETA, you know, we believe that if you provide sewing skills to the masses out there, you know, you could guarantee their sustainability for a very long period. And obviously, then we could have quicker turnaround of garments, which could happen within 1 or 2 days, and that could, you know, meet the demands of our Madam Chair out here. So we need to see that happen within the sector, especially calling for the NCV program. So there are challenges, not necessarily within the CETA, but also within the FET sector. But the fact that we've got 7 MOUs, I think, is a credit to us. And we are also, what I would also like to say is that, given the focus of NSDS3 with regard to the public FET colleges, and us obviously, you know, entering into partnerships with them, I would also like to see the FET colleges or the FET sector take up the challenge of obviously of getting a curriculum, an NCV curriculum for clothing, textiles, footwear, and leather, and them also coming to the party. In terms of In In terms of the new venture creation, and obviously we know, we say that we have achieved 65% of the targets. I think the question was with regard to how many of these new ventures are surviving. We haven't, you know, put any kind of tracer study to that as yet. In terms of the indicator and the target, they just request us to monitor, you know, these new ventures for a six-month period and to coach and mentor them for a six-month period to ensure that they are registered with CIPRO, you know, as an organization, as a company, I think which we do quite satisfactorily. So basically what happens after that is that we do offer coaching and mentoring for them to ensure that they are sustainable in the medium to long term. In terms of, once again, there was another question with regard to the provinces, which I think I've expanded on quite sufficiently. I think in Limpopo, as the Honourable Member has mentioned, that there are many dry cleaning companies. We need to, you know, deploy more financial resources when we have these financial resources available to engage in an aggressive and marketing strategy to bring in, you know, the smaller subsectors more aggressively within NSDS3, including, you know, the smaller provinces and, you know, the dry cleaning companies that contribute, obviously, to the levy within the sector. I can assure you that there was no intention, you know, to mask our performance or to obviously, you know, detract, or there was any kind of malintention on our behalf in terms of the way we compiled this presentation with regard to the five-year strategy. I think as a CETA and as a sector, we are very proud of our achievements that we have achieved thus far, given the constrained financial and human resources within the CETA. There was no intention whatsoever. In certain of the indicators, we are very honest, we have overperformed. Indicators where we have underperformed, we have mentioned it, but we are saying that there is work in progress and we need to look at strategies going forward to address how we're going to look at meeting those targets, etc. You'll notice that within the presentation, if you look at the way we list the targets, we also give you the 2009-10 as outlined in the annual report in terms of the targets. So there was no malintention from our side to mask any of the targets. We thank you for obviously congratulating us on obviously the low salaries that have been paid to the management staff. Actually, we are very appreciative of the salaries we receive from the CETA. We don't make, you know, demands on the council to like boost salaries year on year, etc. And our increases year on year has been very much aligned to increases of the civil service in terms of government, you know, and even below. So we thank you very much for that. I'd also like to just expand a little bit on the job losses in the CTFL sector, you know, and in terms of the productivity of the workers and the links between obviously the reports and the plans that have been announced by the sector, and how to expand the sector. Obviously, you know, the sector has been targeted through the industrial policy and action plan, you know, IPAP 2, as a prioritized sector, as a sector where there are opportunities for growth, etc. And I can tell you that the CTFL stakeholders, that is the council members and the senior management, as engaged with the DTI, we have compiled a 1.3 billion rand, you know, skills development project plan, which we have lodged with the NSF, you know, and we have been unsuccessful in procuring, you know, funding, either from the DTI, the NSF, or from government, to really implement the skills development project plan, which was compiled by a DTI consultant that looked into the customized sector program for both clothing and textile, footwear and leather, and much obviously to the consternation and to the distress of the CTFL stakeholders. We are unable to procure funding. We are currently awaiting the outcome of three project proposals that we have put through the NSF, okay, in terms of the last funding window, which was also aligned to that skills development project plan. So I can tell you that the sector has really engaged in terms of the strategies, the key action programs four IPAP 2 and one looks at the competitiveness improvement program, the production incentives, the technology upgrade, we have marketed all those programs, the key action programs for IPAP 2, you know, very widely at all our regional training forums, invited special speakers to promote and market these programs within the sector. So as a CETA, I think we have done everything and more, okay, to stem the job losses and to defend jobs within the sector. And I think special mention must be made of the union initiatives, you know, with regard to this. And obviously, you know, they have a special interest in the way we market all our strategies, et cetera, and the outcomes of the NSF applications. Thank you for commending us on our negotiations with WNR CETA. I think, you know, we were quite astute in being one of the few CETAs to actually intercollaborate with another CETA. You know, we always go with the begging bowl and trying to procure donor funding. It's not really an easy thing to do, but we put these project proposals together. Much of the work within the CETA is done by ourselves. We don't employ consultants to do these works. We believe that, you know, we've got sufficient capacity to address this, to address sector interventions, etc. I think, you know, when one looks at the 18 disabled learners, in terms of the background of this project, you know, they come from a sheltered environment, employment agency, which was S.A. Lewis. There was a myriad of disabilities. They were not necessarily physically challenged. Some of them obviously were intellectually challenged. So they had various challenges, and I wouldn't like, you know, I cannot now recall the specific challenges with regard to the S.A. Lewis project. But what I can assure you that in terms of innovation and technology within the sector, yesterday I attended a special presentation that was done at the Cape Peninsula University of Technology, where they showed us special adaptations, you know, that are done to sewing machines for disabled learners that can, you know, upskill disabled sewing machinists within the sector, which I was quite interested in. In terms of the CTFL implementation of learnerships, when one looks at the number 51, this relates to the occupational programs, this relates to the occupational qualifications that are registered against those learnerships, okay, that have learnership titles, work-based programs. Those are just titles of the various programs, okay, and the qualifications. It's not the numbers in terms of learners registered and learners graduated in the sector. I mean, that I think we've been quite successful. In terms of how we got to the 80% and above placement rate, I think it was an extensive, in-depth, detailed tracer study that was undertaken in the sector, that where learners were actual learners were traced. Some of them were not even employed within the sector, but they were found, and, you know, we had to trace where they were in the sector. And some of the specifics of that learnership tracer study related to, obviously, those that are qualified, certified, employed by the very employer that trained them or you know, under whom they undertook the learnership program. Then we looked at some of the learners that, obviously, that were retrenched.
I'm going to request you to start dropping
off. Okay. In terms of training layoff scheme, what's happening, the challenges of absorbing the learners within the sector. What I can tell you that there is that a number of companies have reported, have got off the scheme because obviously they've reported that they've recovered. But there are huge challenges with regard to the TLS, which most probably I could like relate to a little later on, in terms of companies firstly expressing an interest of coming onto the scheme and suddenly they get a few orders and then they want to go off within the scheme. And you must also note that the training layoff agreement is, you know, for a fixed period only. So there are huge challenges, and they want to go off the scheme and no longer want to participate within the scheme, although we encourage that. Some of them have, you know, taken on learners, have started going on these training interventions for a few days and then simply got off the scheme. In terms of our learnerships, which is at level 1 or 2, I can assure you there are also higher-level learnerships at 3 and 4 that would relate to, obviously, team leader development and management development, okay? We've also got those programs that are available. Some of them may not be registered as yet, but going forward, we intend addressing it through the QCTO qualifications development process, okay? And we'll deal with it from the process of, obviously, the occupations, where we intend setting up new qualifications. But one also need to look at, obviously, there are lots of management programs, informal programs, accredited programs that we offer through the management funding window at a higher level for workers. So the training doesn't only take place at NQF level 1 and 2. Okay? So we also attract people at a higher level. Okay, well, going forward, just are there any question or any burning question that you have that haven't been addressed by me as a CEO as yet that you want an answer for in terms of the IE Education and Training Committee?
I'm not so sure if there's anything, because I would like to wrap the meeting. We are way out of our time frame, and I've got another meeting that started at 1. I'm already 25 minutes late to it. I don't know if there's anything, members, that you feel that has not been answered. I don't have any indication that you've covered the issues, but we needed to. I think my sending comments that I made to the future sense in terms of us continue to engage. You've been fortunate enough. Maybe if you can have your mic off.
Sorry.
Yeah, that we have been able to interact with you before, and but it still warrants for us to interact more. We'll deal with the process of your fact plan, which as the committee we feel strongly around issues of your targets, how you put your targets, and what, and we think you're going to strongly influence that process, making sure that the targets are realistic, but as well that are of what is reflected as a demand out there. So we'll definitely come back and request you to come through for that process. We'll alert you through the committee secretary. But the number of issues that we have raised as comments that would obviously hope that you look into the matters as part of improving within the sector. So with those few words, I'd like to say thank you very much for the presentation, Chairperson and the CEO and members of the team. And we appreciate you sitting here with us. And you wanted to speak on that?
Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity. We really appreciate it. Thank you. Keep up.
Okay, thank you, members. Members, all the minutes that you have received and the reports, we have sessions, our last sitting before we rise as a house. We deal with all the minutes and all the reports. So you are being, you are receiving them so that you can have enough time to look at them. So the last sitting of our committee will be dealing with those reports. And there are two members that I'm going to deploy to a portfolio committee of public service and administration, because that committee is going to deal with the human resource plan and human resource strategy. Both the Minister of Higher Education and Minister of Public Service and Administration will be involved in that committee. Unfortunately, we can't all go as a portfolio committee meeting members because we've got other engagements with the CTAS that have been scheduled already for next week. So we will deploy and I'll alert members accordingly. We'll make sure that party political representation is observed. Thank you very much, members. On that note, the meeting is adjourned.